This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Bill and Roberta Maria Atti.
Together again.
That brings you back. Hey, you of all people, huh, Roberta? I thought you were Mastrio Manzi.
Maestro Manzi. That was when I was a kid. But when my kids were little, every day we watched Mr. Rogers every day, and I loved it. I loved it. Those were the good times.
What were the good times about Mr. Rogers?
Mr. Rogers would go and visit with all kinds of people. Factories and places, the most unthinkable, unimaginable places he would go and visit, and he would interview people. And it was just a warm, fuzzy feeling that I get when I hear his theme song, because it brings me back to, you know, the times when I would sit on the floor in front of the TV with my kids, and I would watch Mr. Rogers after Sesame Street. And he had a special way of relating to his audience that made him feel like a part of your family.
Which brings us to our subject today. Today, we're, as in all week, we've been talking about the your relationship to your machines. We've been talking about different machines that we're related to, cell phones. Tomorrow we're going to talk about computers. We talked about all the different things. We mentioned automobiles. But today we want to talk about radio and television. And, my friends, I think you're going to find this stuff fascinating. Because what happens when you get home, or some people go home, and many people do, they turn on the radio, turn on the TV. What's happening to all those people who are carrying iPods around their ears? What's happening, okay? Do you think they're just listening to music or listening to programs? We've now learned that our programs can be, or many of our programs can be downloaded to iPods, so there are folks who walk around listening to The Positive Mind as much as they can, because there's about 65 hours they could listen to, or they're listening to music. Or they are going home. And what is this? Do you think we're just dealing with a listening phenomenon? No. No, something else is going on. And we're here to explore that with you today. Today we're going to talk about your relationship to the news and television. By the way, I want to mention in among the machines that we're related to, another one is keys. You know, I was looking at my keys this morning, and I have a relationship with my keys.
But Is keys a machine?
Well, to me they are, because they open a machine, which is doors.
Oh, I see.
You know, mm-hmm. And I was looking, and I have about, 10 keys on my key ring. And I was saying, each and every one of these, you know, there's 3 to the offices and 2 to the home and 1 to another place and 1. All of these keys have a relationship with me. They all have meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about TV and radio. Roberta, what happens to a person? I mean, what really happens to a person when they get home, pop on the TV, and take off their shoes and sit down? And I mean, is it the same as, you know, some people get home, they light a joint. Some people get home and they drink a drink. Other people get home, they have a cup of coffee. Now, those are kind of obvious because you're adjusting your chemistry, right? Chemical adjustment.
Mood altering, it's
right.
Called.
Right. I'm going to do a mood alteration. I get home, give me a drink, give me a joint, give me a, you know, whatever it is that people do. You know, whatever it is that they do, I'm going to take 2 aspirin when I get home. Whatever they do, they're directly altering their mood through chemistry.
Mm-hmm. They want to turn off something and on something
else.
Well,
maybe. Or maybe they want to double turn on. I'm not sure what their motive is.
Well, it seems to me that it's a way of no longer being engaged with whatever you did during the day and now engaging with something else.
Okay, so now, what is the process? What happens chemically? Right. Let's go for the chemical part. Start with the eyes.
What happens is that when we sit down and watch television, because we take it in through the eyes, the eyes then send a signal to the brain, and the brain responds by shifting its activity from one center to another. When you are at work during the day, engaged in your day-to-day activity with other people, let's say with your reality life, you are most likely centered around your neocortex, the intellectual sphere of your mind, and also most likely you are shifted more in the left hemisphere of the brain, which is the one that is about reasoning, analyzing, logic, etc., etc. So when you come home and you turn on the TV and you sit down in front of the TV and you relax, what happens is you now shift through the eyes. The optic nerve takes in the image. Because it's an image, because it's not alphabet, it's, you're not reading anything, you're taking in an image, a more primitive activity in the brain is activated, is stimulated. And the brain shifts from left hemisphere to right hemisphere and from the cortex to the limbic system. The optic nerve stimulates activity in the limbic system directly, and that is the seat of emotions.
So, it's like flushing the toilet. You come home and you say, I've had enough, boy, I'm tired. You turn on the TV and your body... Now, by the way, even though there are distinctions, you may turn on music and listen to music. Similar things happen. You may turn on the radio and listen to the radio. You may go to your pre-recorded program, The Positive Mind, and listen to that. All of these things go into your mind and shift you away from the cerebral cortex to the limbic system. And what's the beauty of the limbic system? You can feel.
You can feel, and you don't have to engage your reasoning, and therefore you're much less selective about what you take in, and you're much less straining. You're more in a passive mode.
So once you get to the point where this happens, now, Roberta, isn't there an interaction also with endorphins?
Yes, because when you shift from left to right hemisphere and you go into that more primitive brain activity, the brain secretes a higher level of endorphins than when you're in your left hemisphere.
Now, this happens much more with television than it does with radio, right?
Which is one of the reasons why it is believed that TV watching can be addictive.
Because it's a hypnagogue, in a sense. Because the visual cortex and the way it can trigger endorphins.
We didn't say what endorphins are.
Endorphins are the hormone-like substance that we have in our body. That's an opiate-like substance. That's a hormone.
Yes.
And that this makes you feel good. This is like heroin and cocaine and morphine, not cocaine, morphine. And by the way, while we're on heroin, just a quick mention. Anybody on the Lower East Side, I'm sure you're well aware of it. If you happen to be a radio listener and not hearing the news, there seems to be a bad batch of heroin out there, and people are dying rapidly. So if you know anybody who is a heroin user, it's really a moment to stop.
Yeah.
To stop to look at
several
what's happening.
Several deaths have occurred in the past few days.
And sorry for that bit of reality at that moment. But what happens is you get this kind of endorphin feeling, makes you relax, and you don't know it. You sit down. You don't want to hear your husband talk to you or anybody talk to you. You want to just get this moment and let the shift happen, but it's a chemical shift. You're going to get a shift. It's a drug. And it's not a bad drug necessarily, but it is a way of shifting because you can't do the shifting during the day. If you're at work and your mind is challenged, you somehow cut off your feelings and you want to re-own your feelings. One of the ways people have done that is through the media, through television, through radio, or through music.
You know, what happens is that the part of the brain that is activated is the part that we share with reptiles. It's the part that reacts with instinct. So, it's a very non-discriminating section of the brain. And it is relaxing precisely because it's non-discriminating, because it doesn't activate any kind of sharp thinking. It takes in whatever it is given and accepts it, basically. But, of course, one can go overboard with this kind of relaxation, and some people do behave like they are addicted to TV watching.
Okay, so now let's say that you're in the middle of it, and now comes content. Now, if you're in the middle of this kind of high, and you got this kind of, oh, now I'm relaxed, now I'm feeling, now I'm not thinking, I got my shoes off, then come these characters who come on. Now, it could be a news commentator. It could be a favorite soap opera. It could be anything that you're watching, but when you're watching these, in a way, you're feeling an endorphin kind of love. Relationship.
You're very accepting, yes.
With the person who's there on the other side of it, so.
And you start to take them in as if they were real, in a way, because your thinking defenses, let's call it, your thinking mind is deactivated. You're not thinking, you're taking in. And if you're, let's say, used to watching a particular show every Monday night, and you like it for whatever reason, the people, the characters on that show are no longer, unreal. They become real for your brain. Your brain reacts to them as if they were real.
You know, sometimes you see somebody who's very involved in a program like a soap opera or a comedy or something, Will and Grace or something like that, and they're watching it. And if somebody comes along and says, but they're actors, you could get angry at them because you say, no, don't. I'm in it. I want to be in it. Don't hit me with reality.
Mm-hmm.
Don't show me reality because that takes me out of this chemical experience.
That's what I do with Lucy Ricardo.
You were a Lucy junkie.
Oh, please. I can't get enough of that. Lucy, to me, don't tell me that Lucy is not real. She is absolutely real.
Oh, Roberta, what we learn about our media characters. You see, we too are media people to you. You who are listening have a relationship with us as well. You have a relationship with me and a relationship with Roberta. We're going to go back to the TV thing in a minute. But, by the time you meet me for the first time, or you meet Roberta, you and I have shared a lot of endorphins. We have, and you don't share many endorphins with many people. But I'll tell you the look. What happens to you, Roberta, when somebody meets you for the first time?
Every time, 100% of the times, people say, oh, you don't look at all the way I pictured you. Finally, I get to put the face with the voice, and you are totally different from what I thought you would be.
That's interesting. I think I don't get that as much because my picture is plastered all over the place when they go to my website.
Right.
So they get a good idea of what I look like. I get a different thing. I get a thing of, you know, I know you. I mean, people look at me, especially if they come to me for a consultation. You know, I do psychological consultations, and if people want to sit down and meet with me, I have the advantage over every therapist in the world because the people know me.
Mm-hmm.
They know how I think. They know how I feel. They have a relationship with me, and they've shared endorphins with me.
Absolutely.
You know, you don't get that with many therapists. So the person walked in, and the first thing I try to do when a person walks in is I try to talk for 3 minutes mm-hmm. so they can identify my voice.
Sure.
You know, I just try to say, well, now, here's what I see from the papers you filled out. And they're watching my lips move and the voice come out of me, and now they're making sure that it's me. But I have an immediate advantage because you know me.
And a lot of memories are being activated as they listen to you. Memories are being activated of when they heard you on a certain show where they really needed to hear something that you said. Boom, that memory is activated when they listen to you. Which is actually, you're bringing up something that this is one of the reasons why I finally decided to put my picture on my website as well, because I was kind of wondering whether it was good or bad that everyone would say, you look so different from the way you sound. I wonder what that means, you see? What does it mean that
I could tell you, different? I can tell you, before the internet, I used to not have my photograph on the website, and here's what people would do. They would project on me some person from their family
mm-hmm.
that had a similar kind of, they had a similar reaction to. So usually I looked like some uncle who was very kind to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they would say, I thought you were very short. I thought you had a mustache. I thought, and then when I traced that for them, I'd find that there was one person in their family that they did feel safe with.
Yeah.
And so if you feel safe with somebody, that's the idea you get. You associate it to something. So I think the people who are saying to you, Roberta, you look like so-and-so, are saying it to you because they've had this kind of person in their lives that they felt the same way as they do with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're that nice person who I could identify with.
And what I also have discovered is that often people will imagine things about me that they would like me, they like to think that I'm able to do certain things or that I'm a certain way, and they will imagine that I am indeed that way. And so when they see me, they are certain that I am that way in which they have imagined me. And I find that fascinating because I have done that myself with people in the media that I have watched or listened to. I mean, Armand, I listened to you for years before I met you, and I certainly did that with you and with other people I can think of.
What did you think I had as talent or intrinsic quality that you thought I had?
Well, I thought that you were very kind that you had a big heart and that I got the same, pretty much the same description that you gave a minute ago of what people usually perceive you as, that benevolent male figure in the family that one likes to relate to.
Well, I think something else comes up. I think part of what we are attracted to in the media, and I'm going back now to the general media, when you're attracted to a newscaster or to a character on the television, there is something about it that appeals to you, and usually what appeals to you is some part of yourself that's epitomized or personified in this other person. Now, let's use a couple of examples here. Let's think about
Howard Stern.
Howard Stern.
Anger.
Howard Stern has, well, he doesn't seem angry. I mean, Howard Stern shows anger.
He voices anger.
He doesn't say, I'm angry.
No, but his message is break the rules.
That's right.
Be rebellious.
That's right.
Irreverent, disrespectful as can
I would
be.
Say irreverence mm-hmm. is his primary quality
yeah.
that people relate to. They love the irreverence. There's a movie out now called The Aristocrats, which kind of relates to the irreverence of a joke, and it's becoming very popular. Irreverence. It's not that he voices anger. It's not like he's, you know, one of these angry guys on radio or television who's screaming at people. No, no, no. He shows irreverence for everything, for doctors, for women, for romance, for relationships. He's irreverent.
There is nothing that he considers sacred, you know, untouchable. Everything is up for grabs.
So this appeals to the part of us, the people who are attracted to Howard Stern.
Howard Stern.
It says, you know, you've got that part of you that wants to be irreverent, and so you pay attention to somebody who's irreverent. And I'll say this also. The people who hate Howard Stern have the same quality. If you love him or hate him, you're connected to him. If you hate him, then you hate that part of yourself.
Mm.
Because why would you hate Howard Stern?
Well, he's a nuisance.
I listen to Howard Stern, and the stuff he does sometimes is
he's
really
boring.
No, it's not just boring.
I don't know. To me, it's boring. I wouldn't waste
time. I think it's politically incorrect.
I've listened to him a couple of times, and I just thought it was boring, but that's me.
Well, okay. I don't want to go into questioning that.
Right.
Before I judge him, let me look at what's there. And what I see is a guy who's irreverent. I don't like what he's representing. I don't like his attitude towards women. I don't like it. I don't want to be a part of it. I won't listen. Okay, if there were a vote, should he not be on the radio? I would rather not have that on the radio. However, people want it. That's why he's one of the most popular radio hosts in the world. Let's take a look at someone else. Jerry Springer.
Mm, wow.
Another irreverence.
So popular. But see, he's not irreverent himself. He's actually, when you watch him, I've watched him a couple of times, he acts very meek. Kind of very...
Yes, like an innocent.
Yep.
He's like an innocent who's uncovering this bestiality, you know?
He's beyond it. He's not touched by it. He presents it, but he's not affected by it.
And some of the stuff that he presents as well. Some of the stuff that he presents is not to my liking. And I certainly don't spend any time watching Jerry Springer, but there is an audience out there who is feeling this way. They feel this irreverence, especially around sexual things. So if they've got a guy up there, you know, men who have sex with their parakeets, you know, and they would uncover all of these people. I mean, there's people who want to watch this because there's this part of them. If you hate it or you love it, there's a part of you. Now I listen to the different psychologists who are out there, and I listen to, you know, I don't listen to, but I pay attention to Dr. Phil and Dr. Judy and the other ones who are out there, and what they have is they have a way of making you feel wrong. There is a group of radio hosts who are strongly judgmental. And the ones who are strongly judgmental are telling you, they're
punishing you.
It's almost like they're evangelists,
Yeah, it's a punishment.
And so now you're listening because you believe you deserve this punishment mm-hmm. because you have this attitude about yourself.
I guess it assuages your guilt.
Well, I used to know loads of people who would listen to Gary Null and listen and never do a single thing that followed his regimens. And they would listen to him religiously because they wanted to hear how wrong they were. because Gary would be quick to tell you, you know, hey, don't eat this because you're killing that, or don't eat this because it's no good for you. Oprah Winfrey. Now, there's another appeal. Very, very popular. What do you think Oprah Winfrey's appeal is to people? Now, remember, we have people in a hypnagogic state. They are sitting down. They are drugged. They're stoned. They're watching TV because now the wave of TV is coming over them. They watch in their... They open. They watch La Femme Nikita, and they're watching the series, and they feel love. They feel an endorphin rush. They start identifying with the characters. They think that each character is real. If you take the characters away, they feel like they've lost something personally. I actually remember somebody mourning the death of a character on TV who had lost their contract, you know, and they were grieving it. Oh, how could they have died?
But
Oprah Winfrey is
different. Oprah Winfrey, in my view, she symbolizes the empowered, disempowered, meaning that she, being an African American woman in society, represents a group of people who are, you know, socially disempowered. And she made it. She made it big. She made it to the top. She has a voice. And so she's a winner. She represents the possibility of success for all of the people who feel disempowered. So I think that in that, it's her winning formula. But something I wanted to say, Armand, to bring up about this emotional aspect of reacting to radio and TV is that when you get to engage people's emotions, you are engaging in a way the most powerful aspect of a person's life. You're engaging the part that it's the part that is alive. It's the part that feels, as you were saying. And when this was discovered, a lot of research was done to figure out how to use these media channels to engage and to move the masses in certain directions.
Sure. Why do you think that what kept television going was advertising? And isn't advertising going into the perfect spot? Here we have you hypnagogued, hypnotized, endorphed. We have you swimming in your emotions. We have you watching Everybody Loves Raymond, and you're feeling delighted, and you're feeling happy, and or you're scared from watching it, which we're going to talk about, the power of that.
Yeah.
And then we slip in an advertisement. It's not like we're just showing you something on a bus, because an advertisement in print has nowhere near the power of an advertisement that's going to be put on you when you're in the middle of this emotional chemical reaction, which includes radio or television. You know, radio, television, including and this is why a lot of people control their own media. They'll control it. You know, they'll want to get a TiVo machine so they can skip through commercials. They'll tape programs so they can get out of this kind of thing, or they'll listen to public radio.
But see, that doesn't do much, because let's say that you skip all the commercials and you know, you think you're in control, but then you're watching the news and the commentators are really selected because they look a certain way that is trustworthy by the great majority's approval. So if that TV commentator expresses an opinion, even with just an expression on his face, that can stir the brains of millions of people in one direction, simply because he symbolizes the goodness in us.
And not only symbolizes, but remember, you're feeling good when you're watching,
right?
And you may be feeling fear, which we're going to get to as soon as we get back from our break. But just as you're saying, if Peter Jennings lifted an eyebrow when he did a report about somebody's behaviors, everybody would have felt the same skepticism.
Right.
Hey, this is Armand DeMille with Roberta Mariotti. We're looking at your relationship to machines, which includes the media, and we're going to take a very short break. And when we come back from the break, we will be bringing you more information related to fear and the effect of fear on the media with you.
Hi, this is Danny Glover, and you're tuned in to WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
Tahrir, Liberation. Marhaba, I'm Barbara Nimri Aziz. Tahrir is a long WBAI tradition and still strong in voices of the Arab Muslim community here and abroad. I invite you to tune in Tuesday evenings at 7 for discussions on Islam and society, justice and injustice, in-depth interviews with writers from across the world, and Fen Majnoon, Crazy Arts, with Dean and Maysoon.
Since you've heard that, Roberta?
A long time. I love that piece of music. Fernando Trecafem.
Fernando's Armando's Hideaway.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie Bird and Lorienda Almiedo is what you're listening to.
Hmm.
You see, now here's what I do strategically on radio, is I use music in between to connect with your emotions.
Sure.
I mean, but that's what our program is about. Our program is basically about getting you down from your intellect to your limbic system. I mean, it is called the positive mind, but it is also the positive heart.
And that is important because when you shift from the left hemisphere to the right hemisphere, you're connecting to the part of the human that feels, and therefore the part that feels alive. And connected to the rest of humanity.
Without emotions, oof,
yeah,
life is pretty dull.
Yes, I mean, the reasoning part of the brain, the thinking, the intellectual self is important, and it needs to be activated in certain situations, and it needs to be in control in certain situations. But it certainly feels good when we can shift away from that and into our more emotional self, because then we feel more connected to our bodies, for instance. When we react emotionally, the body comes alive.
This is Armando Miller with Roberta Maria Atti. We're with you at The Positive Mind, and we've been talking about your relationship, or I've been talking about all week, your relationship to machines. Machines and the things we have around us that help us out that are not human. However, here comes a concept. We talked about how when you watch television, or you're in a television program, or you're watching a television series, you have not only a complete chemical shift that serves to make you feel more, you feel connected to the characters. You love the characters. You could have great love for Will and Grace or Michael.
Captain Picard.
Or, who is Captain Picard?
The commander of the Starship Enterprise.
And Captain Picard. You have these love relationships. And then here becomes a problem. You meet your husband, your wife, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your boyf. I forgot to tell you this, Roberta. Somebody sent me an email, and they said boyfriend, and then under it they said girlfriend, but they left out the rend.
Mm-hmm.
So it became boyfriend girlf. So now, it's nice. I like it. So now you got your girlf or your boyf, and you got your husband or your wif. And you're trying.
Oh, skipping a letter at the end, so not at
skip,
the beginning.
They skipped, in this case, they skipped five letters. So you have this relationship. Now you try to have as good a feeling with your mate as you do on TV. So I'll give you an example. A man sits down and he watches a football game. And there are so many chemicals going on inside his body. Plus, he's eating Doritos and he's drinking beer. And all of this is taking place while he's probably smoking, but not all people do. He's got all these chemicals going on. He's in this perfect mental set, and maybe his mate comes over and says, I'd like to talk to you about the kids. You see, what are we going to do about next year's school clothing? You see, and he's in this limbia, you know. He's living in limbia.
I like the word that you came up with before, endorphed.
He's endorphed, right?
He's endorphed.
And well, you know, we do this limbic dance. We get into this place where our emotions are charged and we're in it. It's fantastic. How does a mate match that? It's a real problem.
Sure.
You know, you'd rather he comes home and watches TV all day. Yeah, because he feels better watching TV than he feels watching you, being with you.
Well, the thing is that the shift away from the left hemisphere / neocortex is also a shift away from the challenges of real life, I guess. It's also a shift away from the difficulties of real life. And if one feels overwhelmed with the the bills that have to be paid, the kids that needs new shoes, etc., then it's very difficult to be grateful if someone shakes you out of that stupor that you're in as you watch your football game or whatever it is that you like watching.
You know what Lupe did yesterday? You know, anything that you would talk about. Let's talk about fear. Now, this is really phenomenal. Starting 1938, let's go back to the story. Because, as I said, we were researching it. We discovered a lot of things about what makes good programming and not good programming, what makes for good radio hosts.
Well, it was the night before Halloween, 1938, 8 p.m., CST, Mercury Radio.
On the air, and you all know the story. H.G. Wells broadcast The War of the Worlds.
As if it were really happening.
Yeah, and he said, here it is, as a newscast.
Right.
And people didn't stick around to the end. Thousands of people were...
Which is, by the way, Orson Welles' radio adaptation of War of the Worlds.
Right.
And it was being read not as a radio adaptation of fiction, invasion of, you know, ETs, but as newscast. And so that was kind of like a joke that the, you know, people at the station thought they were pulling on the audience.
1 million people believed the world was actually under attack by Martians.
Yeah, and they
remember
reacted.
At the time, this is the only radio. There was like one radio station.
Right.
You know, so you couldn't say, well, let me switch to another station and see if the attack is on that. And there was no TV and no cell phones to call and call Mars. Are you attacking us? You know, none of that was taking place. So of that number of
you
people.
You have a cell phone that calls Mars?
I do.
Oh.
I think that's who calls me.
I'd like one, too. So what happened is that the thousands of people fled in a panic. They rushed out of their homes and started running in the streets, totally in a state of panic, convinced that we were being attacked. And this is the reaction. I think that there were some suicides,
mm-hmm.
or someone
yes.
died.
And people died in the panic.
The reaction was so extreme that it prompted funding by the Rockefeller Foundation to start a research in Princeton University that would study the effects of radio and TV, no, radio, I'm sorry, at that time, on people's minds.
Now, somebody, and I can't imagine that Rockefeller would have had any interest other than humane.
I'm sure.
Right? Said, look at this effect. Let's do a study and figure out how this
There's
works.
Something in here.
There's
that
something
looks
in here that maybe we could make us do benefit mankind.
Definitely.
Right?
And so they did this research that was ongoing for quite a while, and it's still going on in a lot of different ways. It has expanded, in fact. And this research, the original piece of research is called the Cantrell Research. The Cantrell Project, C-A-N-T-R-I-L, this piece of work came to the conclusion that people are very, very easily manipulated into emotional reaction through fear.
Through fear. So just think about orange alert, red alert,
right.
green alert, blue alert, you know, and
pink alert.
And subway.
Is there a pink alert?
Oh, there must be. There must be. It has to do with pork, I think. But all the fear.
Yeah.
Newscasters said, I know there was one, blood cells. I know that's a big one, that if there's any kind of bleeding and you could show any kind of bleeding, that's going to be your best newscast. And there were other newscasters, anything that scares people
mm-hmm.
fixes them to the radio. The more frightened they are, the more you sell, the more scary you could be. So look at the wonderful amount of people, of stuff that people got with 9/11. The news took it and they ran it to the hilt. In fact, it was used as the basis of going to war.
Do you remember how many times the actual video of the collapsing on the, of the towers was shown? I think thousands of times. Every couple of minutes they would show it over and over and over and over again. And then they would also compliment themselves for doing such a good job being so informative. And, you know, who can blame them? Who can say, well, no, you're being self-serving? But, you know, the more mayhem you broadcast and televise and describe, the more people are going to pay attention.
So fear sells, my friends. We have a few things. Sex sells, love sells.
Anger sells.
Anger sells, but fear sells.
Do you
the
know?
The biggest sale of fear has to do with you have to be worried about the other guys, but if you pay attention to us, you're part of our team. You see, therefore, when all the media get together and they say, we are the good ones and they are the bad ones out there, your fear is handled by your being connected to us, the good ones.
Right.
In fact, sometimes media takes up responses against the other media. And let's say there are two kinds of media. Let's say there is a kind that says, No, you're not doing right in the kind that says we are doing right, or the one that's with the group who is, well, let's just say, for example, let's take WBAI. WBAI is based on fear. You know, fear, a lot of fear. You have to watch out. You have to be told. I mean, we are, this station, Pacifica Radio, was built on not the fear that the rest of the world was built on, but the fear that you were being manipulated into fear.
It's a counter-reactionary fear.
But it's also, you have to be afraid of your water. You have to be afraid of what they're doing. You have to be afraid of the politicians. You have to be afraid. So there is so much fear on our station, as well as there's fear all over the place in the media.
It's a different kind of fear, but it's still fear. Yeah.
Somebody came along and started a radio program where they were just going to report good news. It lasted 1 month. Because without fear, without sex, without anything exciting, people would not pay attention.
You know, Armand, there is a website. I was going to, a while ago I started to say there's a website called goodnews.com. And this is a website that only gives you good news. And it's a tiny, tiny little.
Right.
You can see
they've
that.
Had 12 hits
right.
So far.
You can see that no one goes there. No one cares. No one wants to know how good things are. But yes, so the thing is the limbic system. You're activating the dinosaur when you're stimulating fear. You're pumping the adrenaline. There's another addiction, because let's face it, the more scared we are and we run out and buy duct tape by the pound, the more adrenaline we're producing, the more activated and hyper and excited. And, you know, in a way, we're enjoying that kind of rush, which is opposite to endorphed rush, but it's still a rush that we can appreciate.
Another thing that general fear does is it helps people get together on the outside. You see, when people are frightened, they huddle. Just as we do in nature, you know.
Like the penguins.
Like the penguins, like the gazelles, you know what I mean?
I just saw that movie.
They get scared, and they huddle together.
Yeah.
And so part of what fear does is it makes the rest of us huddle.
Yeah.
It makes you hold on to the people you love more. It makes you get more committed to your family. It makes you look at family values and say, well, maybe I should stay here anyway.
And in fact, you know, everything that the invasion of the Martians does is it points to world cooperation.
That's
right. The whole world will cooperate to defend itself from extraterrestrial invaders. So it gives that sense of cohesion that otherwise we're not capable of creating for ourselves.
I saw a couple for a consultation yesterday, Roberta. It's a funny thing. I said to them, you two guys are so close yet so far apart. You know what we need? I said, we need an external tragedy to get you two together. I said, if I could arrange to have an invasion from Mars right now, you two would be so connected you would forget all of your differences.
Right.
But I just couldn't figure out how to do it.
But there is another.
Because I called Mars on my cell phone.
And did you get them?
And nobody answered.
Oh.
I think they're all out.
You can try again.
Okay, let's stick with this. We have.
Right,
let's talk about the Nazis.
Okay, but there's also the piece about the new kids that I want to talk about. The
Nazis and the children.
Part of the research, the Cantrell research that I was talking about done at Princeton, was revolved around the techniques, broadcasting techniques of the Nazis, because that was the most successful radio campaign in history to mobilize a nation to follow the craziness of a psychopath.
You know, you're being judgmental.
Oh, excuse me. I guess I should withhold my enthusiasm here. But, I mean, it was so successful that was a big part of the study. How did the Nazis do it? How did they convey the need to do the horrors, to allow those horrors to be committed, that genocide? Well, it was done through the radio. A big part of the whole success of that venture was that the people of Germany were brainwashed by the voice of this man who was able to speak directly to their limbic system.
And right to their fears.
Directly to their fear, right. Mm-hmm. And it worked. And that technique is still being used today.
That's why we're in Iraq.
Well, I wasn't going to say that, but I'm glad you said it.
Yeah, yeah, all right. If you know, the weapons of mass destruction, it's all
that's
you got to
exactly.
do is keep it going, and you're using the same psychology.
That's exactly what we're
the same idea. It. Well, now, so therefore,
right.
we as children, right, we would get there, and we had television, and television hypnotized us, and the next generation, they got hypnotized by television. So we could imagine TV and radio is going to impact on our current kids in such a way that it's going to melt their brains into mush. No.
No, fortunately, we're raising a generation of kids who is really giving us a lot of hope in the sense that, no, they do not like to be told what to watch. They do not like to be passive recipients of this media brainwashing activity. They like to engage in interactive, play-like visual stimuli with computers.
Right, so kids don't watch TV
they don't
passively
watch TV
anymore.
They don't. The 85 million baby boomers are in a way enslaved by the TV.
Now, wait
that's
a minute,
no
isn't
longer
it 80,
80 now
83?
85 million baby boomers.
And then
now,
how many babies are there now?
The children between 0 and 20 are now 88 million. And those kids are shown to not be interested in television anymore because to them it's boring because you can't control what you're seeing. Whereas now through the computer, kids have a choice. And not only do they have a choice as to what they watch, but they can interact with it. And they can put pieces together in what they watch so that they create, in a way, what they're watching. And it's fabulous what it's doing for them because it's growing a generation of children that have a critical mind, a selective mind, an assertive mind, and certainly not endorphed like
we were.
Like their parents.
Right. Not endorphed, not numbed out by TV, not as easily sold materials.
Or scared as easily.
Not scared as easily. They're in touch with each other all the time by cell phones, you know. I mean,
By internet. Through the internet, they could be watching something, doing something together all over the world simultaneously and creating a whole thing that they can all cooperate with people in China and kids in Japan and kids in Africa. And, you know, that's so much more exciting than television watching.
And so you get scared and they say to you, you know, the Chinese are planning, they're sitting there burning flags of the Americans. You could, you know, most kids could call up their friend in China nowadays.
Or write an IM.
Or write an IM, instant message, and they could... And they go, hey, is that really going on down there? You know, and the kids will come back and they'll tell each other the truth.
Right.
It's very hard, and it's a new world.
Yes.
Television is dying.
Yep.
Television
it's
as a
dying
media
dragon.
Is a dying dragon.
Isn't that good news? I'm kind of glad for that. Because I never really liked it.
You want to keep Mr. Rogers to yourself.
Mr. Rogers is one thing. Yes, don't touch Mr. Rogers, but everything else can go. That's my.
But you know, Roberta, if you think about it, fear, we don't do any fear programming here, which is what makes us not as popular as many of the other programs that you have, as Jerry Springer. On regular network, you can get a lot of psychologist shows that put a lot of fear in your blood. You got to watch out for this and watch out for that. And even on WBAI, there's a lot of fear-based programs. You know, be careful, watch out for the secret plots, watch out for this. So we are one of the very few that access this other part of the limbic system, which is not very popular. I mean, we may have a few million people out there, but it's... You know, it's really kind of interesting to imagine you're going to go in. I guess this is like the good news station.
We feel somewhat neglected, yes.
But I can't do it another way.
No.
I wish I could, and then I'd have to sell cat food at the same time. That was one of the things that happened when I went to work. I auditioned for a network.
Commercial
a
station?
Different network. I worked on two other network stations, but one I worked on wanted me to advertise cat food.
Which is really the dead cats.
We'll talk about that another time. You don't want to scare people, do you?
Oh, okay. No, sorry about that.
This is Armand DeMille. I am with Roberta Maria Atti.
Armand,
we've talked to you a little bit. Go ahead. We've got just a minute.
Yes,
Roberta.
Before we end, actually, I wanted to say something about Sunday. I am going to be doing a workshop at Sufi Books, and also I understand that. I understand. Your newsletter went out with my website incorrectly spelled. It's creativehealthsolutions.org. And I just wanted to say that because, to clarify that. That
good.
If you send it to the other one, it's not going to get
good. And
me.
If you haven't gotten my newsletter, be sure to write us at thepositivemind.com and we'll send you the latest copy of the newsletter, which has got a lot of interesting stuff in it, including two good jokes. We will be back with you. I'll be back with you tomorrow talking about computers with two incredible experts on the thing. We'll be back with you tomorrow. If you want a copy of today's program, you call 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488 if you want a copy of today's program. And the name of the program is thepositivemind.com. No.
That's your website.
The website.
And mine is creativehealthsolutions with an S.
I'm getting Michael's music here. That's what I was stalling with. Here he comes. Michael.
What's the name of the program?
Which program?
Today's program.
You and Your Machines, subtitled Radio and TV.
There you
and
go.
This is Cal Jader from Michael's fantastic Star Eyes.
Thank you very much, Armand and Roberta Maria Atti. Thanks for that, Cal Jader. I was looking for my Cal Jader here, my few selections of Cal Jader, but we're out of time right now. Coming up next, Light Show, Vic the Bruiser in control, so stay tuned for that. And on into the afternoon. In fact, what do we got here? Elvis. Oh, my goodness. An Elvis special. You don't touch that dial. You're tuned to listener-supported commercial-free community radio WBAI at 99.5 FM. Stay tuned.
I done dead. All summer junior asking me to help him with an assignment he teacher gave me class to research the stride and challenges that this community has made since they come to America. I scratching my head still, girl, because I don't know how to help here.
Don't worry. The Caribbean Dialogue is having another one of them sessions entitled A Diaspora in Self-Examination. That taking place over by the Brooklyn Public Library, over there by Grand Army Plaza, on Thursday, August 25th at 6:30 p.m. Here.
Look at our presentation from Supreme Court Justice Sylvia Hines Radix and John J. Provost Dr. Basil Wilson. Girl, you saved my life.
Now all I want you to do is pay me some of your best rotis.
Look, they're talking about roti. I forgot to tell you that Dr. Marco Mason from the Caribbean Women's Health Association is going to be there too.
For more information, call 718-230-2100. That's 718-230-2100.
Hi, I'm Ivy Weisskopf.
And I'm Caitlin Garcia.
We are with the New York Writers Coalition.
We invite you to join us Saturday, August 20th at 4:30 p.m. for the Fort Greene Park Summer Literary Festival.
The festival features literary icons Sonia Sanchez, Amiri Baraka, along with rising stars Carl Hancock Rux and Marlon James, and us future literary lions from 8 to 18 who've been writing together this summer in the park.
Plus, music by the Brooklyn Summer Jazz Workshop with Richard Parker and Laron Land, the incredible Danny Simmons as MC, and free copies of Bomb Magazine for everyone. For more info, call the New York Writers Coalition at 718-398-2883. Or visit www.nywriterscoalition.org.
Evening shadows make me blue, when each weary day is through, how I long to be.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.